fourth case, John Doe versus the Archdiocese of Milwaukee. Mr. Anderson.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Anderson. I am one of the lawyers for John Doe 282, a survivor of sexual abuse by a notorious Catholic priest, who entered into settlement negotiations and a mediation. And the court below found that that settlement reached in that mediation with the Archdiocese was not a distinct action in interpreting the admissibility of evidence when it comes to fraud and the inducement. And if that holding stands as before you, can any claimant ever go into a mediation and trust that they can't be deceived and that mediation would not be attackable or subject to scrutiny under the exception 904.085? In this case, it must be. And the reason is a different dispute and different and distinct action and transaction is that in 2007, when this mediation occurred, it was different parties, and the conduct in that mediation is entirely different. They were making representations to this deaf survivor, unrepresented, and they're very clearly deceiving him into believing that this is all the money they had in 2007. It's the same time they were transferring money to the cemetery trust.
And in terms of timing, there were people who settled before he settled for between $100,000 and $200,000, correct?
Correct.
And then, and let me, because just trying to play out your claim, your fraudulent inducement claim, would you think it would be fraudulent inducement for an attorney to say the maximum I have to settle this case is $1 million? And the lawyer knew that the client really had authorized $1.5 million. Is that fraudulent inducement or is that just a part of negotiation?
I don't think that's fraudulent inducement. That's negotiation. And it's arm's length. In this case, it's much more than that. First, this survivor is unrepresented. Second, they set up the mediation and had all their people there and represented. Third, it was at a different time than the original wrongdoing that gave rise to the battery, gave rise to the original fraud, and gave rise to the negligence. And so that would be entirely, Justice Williams, an entirely different scenario. Certainly not. Certainly not. This is an exception in the statute that is for egregious deceit and misrepresentation as reflected in this record. They knew that he was seriously harmed by a notorious offender. They chose to represent to him that this is all the money they had, and it was clear that it was not because they had not transferred all the money that they had. Moreover, they did not even let him know their special knowledge about Lawrence Murphy's long history of predatory conduct known to them for decades. And most of the time, they don't have an affirmative representation to tell people that. But in this case, they did have some obligation to say, you know what?
So what relief, additional relief, are you seeking on your fraudulent inducement claim? More money for the sexual abuse? Or are you saying there was independent damages for being fraudulently induced?
The independent damages would only be the fact that his claim is limited by the settlement, but there's no additional damages by reason of the inducement. All we're seeking is that this particular settlement be voided to the extent it can be sorted out later in the bankruptcy proceeding. And if the claim is not worth $80,000, obviously there is a credit, or that is to be sorted out by the trier of fact and the finder of fact at a later time. So we don't have to decide that here, and it didn't get decided by the lower court.
And then and it's this issue of the Wisconsin mediation communication privilege, which is what this case really focuses on. The Wisconsin courts haven't really given us much guidance, and the Archdiocese says this claim will be moot if the plan is confirmed. Would there be any reason that we should wait to see if the plan is confirmed before we rule in this case?
I think this is an issue that's important, and it has to go into the consideration of the confirmation of the plan, and whether this is a viable claim, and whether that plan can be confirmed, and this and others like it are viable, has to go into the confirmation process.
So you're saying we shouldn't wait then?
I'm saying you should not wait. I think you need to decide this issue for purposes of this individual survivor and all mediations like it where one party induces another fraudulently, and it can't be said that it's a single transaction.
Mr. Anderson, does the record reflect whether counsel was available or usually found in similar mediations?
In most of these mediations, there was not counsel. And the record reflects that, in fact, counsel was excluded. They were excluded, yes.
Now,
this was set up by the Archdiocese.
Does the record reflect the age or the educational background of the sister?
It does not, just that she was there. It does reflect that this survivor was deaf, obviously.
No, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Is there any concern that your client could get less in the bankruptcy proceeding?
No question about it. That real possibility exists. But that's not the question that we need to decide today, and you need to decide. You really need to decide, are we going to reward these folks for making this misrepresentation to this survivor under these circumstances and let a mediation process be misused and allow that survivor to be deceived and reward that behavior? And that, the answer can be not so.
So
in this case,
clear,
or any other.
Your position is we can decide this case. However, the eventual award, whatever that is, would await the decision in the earlier case.
Absolutely, and this is a very fact-intensive analysis that we're asking you to make and render your basis on.
And then, but then I'm still having trouble with about whether this is a distinct dispute or not, because that's how you can get around that mediation privilege law bar.
Right.
When both of these involve those requests for compensation for the same sexual abuse involving the same party, that is, the priest who was the abuser and your client.
Well, the actions, the independent actions, the independent dispute is the fraud and the inducement and the mediation. That is the transaction that happened in 2007 that is distinct and separate from the underlying action that arose in 1973 and 74 and that was brought once the Archdiocese filed bankruptcy in 2011. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Lococo.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, it's an honor to be here. My name is Frank Lococo, and I represent the Archdiocese of Milwaukee. Let me start, Your Honors, by saying that this particular case is not about all those wretched things that Mr. Anderson accuses my client of participating in during the mediation. We're not there. I understand that for purposes of where we are procedurally, that Mr. Anderson gets to say all those things, and the most I'm going to say is there are things that are demonstrably false that are in the record about what A282 has to say regarding what happened at the mediation. For example, the Archdiocese had no counsel there. That's in the record. The only counsel there was the neutral mediator that was selected by A282. And I understand why my opposing counsel wants to get to the issue of manifest injustice, because that's where he gets to say all these negative things. We have to step back from that to look at what the law says. And the law says under Rule 501, it seems to me there should be no dispute about this, that when the state law provides the rule of decision in a case, then the state privilege law applies. There's only two other places in the federal rules of evidence where that happens, Rule 302 on presumptions and 601 on competency of witnesses. So it's a true exception. So 895.045, the mediation privilege statute, applies. In addition, when entering into this mediation in July of 2007, A282 signed a mediation agreement. This is in the record as well, which said that 895.045 would apply. Now, 4 years later, when the Chapter 11 was filed, A282 says, I want to blow up my settlement. I was fraudulently induced into settling this case. Is this the same dispute? It absolutely is the same dispute. Mr. Anderson confirmed that in his argument. A282 is asking for damages for the sexual abuse he suffered at the hands of this notorious priest, Father Lawrence Murphy. He's not asking for different damages for the fraud and the inducement. It's the same. The same parties are involved, the Archdiocese of Milwaukee and A282, and the same issues are involved, the damages he suffered because of the sexual abuse. This is not a distinct dispute. In addition, 904.085, I may have misspoke earlier, but 904.085 specifically says distinct dispute. It doesn't say claim, it doesn't say elements of a claim, it doesn't say a distinct proceeding. As the court knows from the prior record, initially the bankruptcy court found against the Archdiocese, and in reconsidering her decision, she specifically made a finding that she committed error by putting onto the statute a requirement that that the exception doesn't apply if it's a different proceeding. Well, this is a different proceeding, but it's the same dispute. And the appellant's briefs talk incessantly about claims and elements of claims and what the elements of a fraudulent inducement claim are. But as Mr. Anderson just said, the damages here that are being sought deal solely with the sexual abuse suffered by this abuse survivor, A282. Same parties, same issues.
So if he had said that there wasn't, that there were separate and distinct injuries from this fraudulent inducement, it could be a distinct claim.
I don't think so, Judge Williams, for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think a plain reading of the statute says that this is the same dispute. In addition, the settlement agreement, which is also part of the record, says that the parties are releasing each other. In this case, A282 is releasing the Archdiocese from any and all claims, causes of actions, known or unknown, up through the date of signing the agreement. Well, the mediation happened July 6th. The agreement was signed by A282 on July 13th. The Archdiocese signed it on July 20th. So just a technical reading of the settlement agreement, which is, of course, the best evidence of the agreement between the parties, is that if, and we disagree with this, but if the Archdiocese knew that it had more than $80,000 to pay this abuse survivor, when it said we only have $80,000, that fraud, which I don't think is fraud, I think that's negotiation, that would have been released by the settlement agreement itself. And again, I still think it's the same dispute, though.
Well, now, it is true that some of the settlements before his settlement was signed were in the amount of $100,000 to $200,000. Isn't that right?
I'm not aware of any settlements that were that high. I don't believe that in this record, Your Honor, there's a record of, other than the appellants saying it in their briefs, what the settlements were. There were some settlements, though, that, in my recollection, went as high as $120,000.
That preceded this.
Preceded and maybe after this as well. And it depended on the facts. There were the settlement agreement counseled people to get legal advice before signing the agreement. And as I said, the Archdiocese didn't have a lawyer at any of these mediations. They sent, in some cases, the chancellor of the Archdiocese, in this case, someone else. I don't think the name of the specific person is in the record before the court.
So would it be your position that you know, if we ruled in your favor that there could ever be a claim for fraudulent inducement in a mediation settlement?
With all the rest of the facts being the case, which is a mediated settlement in the state of Wisconsin involving a situation where state law provides the rule of decision, yes, I think there is an absolute bar from a public policy perspective supporting confidentiality and finality that mediation communications are not admissible as evidence.
Well, isn't there also, to balance that off, a concern that people might not be so willing to mediate if they knew they could be defrauded and didn't have any recourse?
I agree with Your Honor. You can make that argument. You can make the flip side argument as well, which is if I'm representing a defendant, which is usually my practice, and I can't look my client in the eye and say, you're going to buy your peace from this settlement, it's a disincentive to mediate cases and to settle them. And then the courts would really overflow with trials and appeals. So, yes, you can make the argument that it's a disincentive from that perspective, but it's a huge disincentive to the payers of settlements, defendants, if they're told this is not going to bring you finality negotiating to a mediated settlement. Unless the court has any other questions.
Well, just one, Mr. Polk. I'm re-examining 4E of the Wisconsin statute. What would you offer as an example of what would be needed to make it distinct?
Well, I think we did cite one case. It's an unpublished decision in Ray. I think it's in Emily E.B. or something. That gave the case of a criminal case where one of the participants in a civil mediation was required to give testimony against a criminal defendant, the father of one of the parties in that mediation. It's a distinct case. I gave the example when we were arguing this in front of the bankruptcy court. If I'm in the middle of a mediation and I say, that plaintiff is really upsetting me, I'm going to kill him or her, that person ends up dead, what I said at the mediation, I would think, would fit this situation. The case that is cited is a paternity case. You can think of legal malpractice cases where someone could sue his or her lawyer and argue that I was not properly represented at the mediation. There again, you're not affecting the public policy regarding finality of the dispute that was mediated. You're dealing with a distinct case to provide substantive evidence on another point of law.
So is it your position, because there are unfortunately several of these cases, none of them could ever be distinct? Growing out of the facts of this unfortunate setting.
Assuming that the evidence for fraud in the inducement from A282 or any of the other claimants who are trying to overturn their settlements in the Chapter 11, assuming their only evidence of fraud in the inducement are mediation communications, my answer would be yes. If they're trying to use some other evidence, and I don't believe there is any, then that would be a different story. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Lukoko. Mr. Anderson.
Thank you. I want to clarify. If we look at 4E, it states, in an action or proceeding distinct from the dispute whose settlement is attempted through mediation, the court may admit evidence, otherwise barred. Clearly, the language of the statute and the intention is that if there is a fraud in the inducement, it is a separate action and separate kind of transaction apart from the underlying action. That's the intent. Otherwise, why would that be written in? And the policy behind that is clear. In settlement, we encourage candor. And not to penalize the use of candor at trial if it's not settled. This provision is designed to penalize
deception and deceit and not allow it to induce what happened here. The rule contemplates that it's a separate action, a separate transaction, and here we have different conduct, different time, different actors, and different factors. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed.